Is in Lavender, Part 2. Providence had showered many blessings on Trevanic, but among them is not the gift of tongues. Dr. Mead, who came over every day from St. Madoc, knew less German than the ladies. It was impossible to communicate with the boy except by signs. Old Jan Pendered, who had served in the navy in the China Seas, felt confident that he could make him understand, and tried him with pidgin English. But the youth only smiled sweetly and shook hands with him, whereupon old Jan scratched his head and acknowledged himself jiggered. To Miss Whittington, at last, came the inspiration that the oft-repeated word Polnisch meant Polish. "You come from Poland?" "Aus Polen, ja," laughed the boy. "Kuzwiskos," murmured Miss Ursula. He laughed again, delighted, and looked at her eagerly for more. But there Miss Ursula's conversation about Poland ended. If the discovery of his nationality lay to the credit of her sister, she it was who found out his name, Andrea Marowski, and taught him to say Miss Ursula. She also taught him the English names of the various objects around him. And here the innocent rivalry of the two ladies began to take definite form. Miss Whittington, without taking counsel of Miss Ursula, borrowed old Otto's German grammar from the girls' school at St. Madoc, and, by means of patient research, put to him such questions as, "Have you a mother? How old are you?" and collating his written replies with the information vouchsafed by the grammar, succeeded in discovering, among other biographical facts, that he was alone in the world, save for an old uncle who lived in Krakow, and that he was 20 years of age. So that when Miss Ursula boasted that she had taught him to say, "Good morning, how do you do?" Miss Whittington could cry with the air of triumph, "He told me that he doesn't suffer from toothache." It was one of those curious features of the ministrations which they afforded Mr. Andrea Marowski alternately, that Miss Ursula would have nothing whatever to do with Otto's German grammar, and Miss Whittington scorned the use of English and made as little use of sign language as possible. "I don't think it becoming, Ursula," she said, "to indicate hunger by opening your mouth and rubbing the front of your waist like a cannibal." Miss Ursula accepted the rebuke meekly, but she never returned a pert answer to her senior. But reflecting that Janet's disapproval might possibly arise from her want of skill in the art of pantomime, she went away, comforted, and continued her unbecoming practices. The conversation, however, that the ladies, each in her own way, managed to have with the invalid, was sadly limited in scope. No means that they could devise could bring them enlightenment on many interesting points. Who he was, whether noble or peasant, how he came to be lying like a jellyfish on the slab of rock in their cove, coatless and barefoot, remained a great a puzzle as ever. Of course, he informed them, especially the grammar-equipped Miss Whittington, over and over again in his execrable German, but they grew no wiser, and at last they abandoned, in despair, their attempts to solve these mysteries. They contented themselves with the actual which needed was enough to absorb their simple minds. There he was, cast up by the sea, or fallen from the moon, young, gay, and helpless, a veritable gift of the gods. The very mystery of his adventure invested him with a curious charm, and then the prodigious appetite with which he began to devour fish and eggs and chicken formed of itself a joy hitherto undreamed in their philosophy. "When he gets up, he must have some clothes," said Miss Whittington. Miss Ursula agreed, but did not say that she was knitting him socks in secret. Andrea's interest in the progress of these garments was one of her chief delights. "There's the trunk upstairs with our dear father's things," said Miss Whittington, with more diffidence than usual. "They are so sacred to us that I was wondering..." "Our dear father would be the first to wish it," said Ursula. "It's a Christian's duty to clothe the naked," said Miss Whittington. "And so we must clothe him in what we've got," said Miss Ursula. Then with a slight flush, she added, "It's so many years since our great loss that I've almost forgotten what a man wears."
"I haven't," said Miss Whittington. "I think I ought to tell you, Ursula," she continued, after pausing to put sugar and milk in the cup of tea which she handed to her sister. They were at the breakfast table, at the head of which she formerly presided, as she had done since her emancipation from the schoolroom. "I think I ought to tell you that I've decided to devote my £25 to buying him an outfit. Our dear father's things can only be a makeshift, and the poor boy hasn't a penny in his pockets he came ashore in. Now, some 3 years before, an aunt had bequeathed Miss Whittington a tiny legacy, the disposal of which had been a continuous subject of grave discussion between the sisters. She always alluded to it as my £25.
"Is that quite fair, dear?" said Miss Ursula impulsively.
"Fair? Do you mind explaining?"
Miss Ursula regretted her impetuosity. "Don't you think, dear Janet," she said with some nervousness, "that it would lay him under too great an obligation to you personally?"
"I should prefer to take the money out of our joint income.
We both are responsible for him, and," she added with a timid smile, "I found him first."
"I don't see what that has to do with it," Miss Whittington retorted with a quite unusual touch of acidity.
"But you feel strongly about it. I'm willing to withdraw my £25.
"You're not angry with me, Janet?"
"Angry? Of course not," Miss Whittington replied freezingly. "Don't be silly. And why aren't you eating your bacon?" This was the first shadow of dissension that had arisen between them since their childhood. On the way to the sick room, Miss Ursula shed a few tears over Janet's hectoring ways, and Miss Whittington, in pursuit of her housekeeping duties, made Dorcas the scapegoat for Ursula's unreasonableness. Before luncheon time, they kissed with mutual apologies, but the spirit of rivalry was by no means quenched.